Yeah, welcome to the show, Joshua Lewis from Britain.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so just to introduce it, basically that's a German podcast, but just now in October, we start our English series, and our first guest was Rasmus Svenningsen from Sweden. And yeah, that's why I thought, okay, maybe that's a good idea also to ask you for a podcast, because I remember I raced against you at 70.3 Portugal last year. And also I was watching you at the 70.3 World Champs in Lahti, and Rico Bogen was also in the show.
Yeah.
And he told me after the race, he didn't know who was in the group. And yeah, that was you. And he was quite surprised. And I knew, okay, this guy is quite fast at swimming, and maybe he can stay there and he will do a really good result. Just take us with you about your experience at the 70.3 Worlds.
Yeah, no, it's quite amazing, isn't it, from the Qashqai's result or performance last year, where I was kind of just getting into triathlon, or 70.3 should I say, and it was one of my first dabbling or first efforts at that distance. So I think I've come a long way since then, and hopefully that shows in this recent performance. But yeah, no, Worlds was absolutely amazing for me. I think everything came together. I had quite a tough swim, I think. It was quite rough in comparison to other 70.3 races that I've been in. And I really had to keep my head in order to stay up towards the front. I think it was actually quite tough to get there to begin with, because everyone was at a relatively similar ability at the start of the race, at the start of the swim. So to be able to navigate through those people and towards the front end to try and not miss the front of the race when it got onto the bike was far harder than I thought it was going to be, and far harder than other races that I've been in so far this year. So to come out in the top 15 out of the water was a relief, to say the very least. And I was really happy to actually see the front of the race not too far away from me either. So yeah, didn't panic in transition, managed to get myself onto the bike without any real drama, and then kind of got my head down because I saw Mathis was one ahead of me coming out of transition, and I knew that he was going to be making his way very quickly to the front. So I tried to stay with him as long as possible, but he is so strong on the bike, I had to let him go, and made my own way there a bit slower than what he did. And it was it was quite hard to make the decisions quickly as to who to overtake and who to kind of use to drag myself up to the front. But to be honest, it was a case of just overtaking anyone I could until I was with the front six or seven that ended up being the final group. It was six for quite a while. And then eventually Freddie Funk joined us about, I don't know, 30K or so. So when I saw him coming and he was on his own, I was very, very pleased, because if he'd brought a whole group up with him, I think the result for me would have been completely different, because my run is always and still is my weak point. So the fact that he was approaching on his own was a big, big relief. So it was a relief, but also a massive kind of shock to the system, because as soon as he hit the front after taking, I don't know, what must have been minimum a 5 minute breather after bridging up to us on his own, he put the hammer down again. And from then on, it was just a case of trying to stick with the group and get as aero as possible and put the power down for as long as possible, because it was so hard to stay there. It was so quick, and I was pushing out ridiculous power. I didn't know how long I was going to be able to hold on. I was just trying to shovel food and fuel down as any opportunity I could. And because I was on the back of the group, it was very spiky in terms of my efforts, primarily because when you're at the back, you've got the concertina effect, the kind of like expansion effect when you're going over lumps and bumps on the road, like the hills. So they were punching over the top of the hills, and I was struggling to like stay within the 15 meters because they were just accelerating down the other side. And I was like, this is hell. I don't know how I'm going to stay here. And to be honest, it was only after about 60, 70K that I started to get used to it. And probably it started to settle down a little bit more as well. But I was just under the gun the entire time. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to run off of the back of this as well, because it's the most power I'd ever put out. So I got into transition, I think it must have been sixth, because I think we dropped someone on the bike as well.
I think you dropped Max Speer.
Yes.
That's a German guy. Yeah, so you dropped him.
Yeah, so like it could have been me, because as soon as he was dropped, he dropped 3.5 minutes, I think it was. So I was quite grateful to come into the transition or T2 with the others, just about, because I was getting dropped off the back every now and again and having to put in quite a big effort to reconnect. Even just before the end, I got disconnected and I had to really get aero, be as smooth as possible, and then just like try and reconnect just before transition. And then, yeah, it was six of us. I think Mathis and Freddie had just broken off the front just before transition. But there was about six of us that came in about 3.5 minutes ahead of everyone else. And then it's always a case for me of just trying to hold off as many people as possible on the run. And when I heard we had 3 and a bit minutes, I started to get like obviously a bit of a boost. I'm not confident I could hold them off, but I was like, that is quite a lot for them to run into me. But I also didn't know how I was going to respond to such a hard bike ride. So I had to just like give it my best. It was quite a hilly course, which doesn't suit me either, because I'm a bit of a heavier triathlete in comparison to others. So just tried to do my own thing. I think I managed to overtake Justice Nieschlag within the first couple of K, which was a massive shock to me. I didn't realize he had Achilles issues and whatnot, but I was like, oh my God, I overtook someone, which is so rare. And then when I got onto the last lap and the last few kilometers and no one had caught me yet and the gaps had started stagnating, I then started thinking, oh my God, I think fifth place might actually be possible here. And it was only within the last 500 meters that I looked around and there was no one near me. And I just couldn't believe it that I'd come fifth at the Worlds. It was very overwhelming, to say the very least.
Yes, so after your fantastic result, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Does something change for you, like in perception in Britain or something like that? Is there any new things about that? I just had Rico and he told me that was quite amazing after his win, what happened. Is there about the same for you, that there was some major changes or not at all yet?
I mean, I've grown a lot in confidence, I think, and that helps a lot with racing. And that's not just this race, but a few races leading into it that gave me the confidence to be able to stay where I did within the race. But also after that result, it's really given me the confidence in what I'm doing, like the reassurance, the justification for what I'm doing in terms of training and racing. But then in terms of like outside of that, I think I've got a little bit more exposure. So I've had a bit more interest from media channels. I've had a little bit more interest from sponsors, but not like over the top or anything that's come to fruition yet. But I think the biggest change for me is that I've been in touch with a few people who might be able to help out with sponsorship in terms of a manager. And I've only recently signed with a manager now. But I don't know like what the kind of result is that of that is going to be just yet. So I can't say it's made a massive life change, but it could do for next year.
Yeah, so hopefully, fingers crossed. Maybe take us with you on your journey. You told us that you're quite new to 70.3. So do you have an ITU background, or what's actually your background from triathlon? I just watched your Instagram and I saw, okay, this guy is doing triathlon for quite a while. Yeah, maybe take us with you on your journey.
Yeah, of course. I guess in the grand scheme of things, I haven't been doing it too long. I started only about 5 or 6 years ago in triathlon, but I have I did have a background in swimming before that. Not as a really competitive swimmer, but I did it as a I was a competitive swimmer, but not a good one, if that makes sense. So in about 2017, I transitioned from swimming into triathlon. Because I'm from a small island called Guernsey, I had the opportunity to then go to the Commonwealth Games in 2018. And then that put me in the kind of like ITU short course draft legal kind of circles for the next 4 years as well, in the lead into Birmingham. So I went to Gold Coast in 2018, and then the next big goal was to qualify and go to Birmingham in 2022. So I stuck at short course for all of that time, but I was never really that great at it because I just didn't have the skills to be able to mix it in a group as well as I can just from a system point of view, just in terms of my engine. So I think that when I started dabbling in a bit of 70.3 at the back end of 2022, I was like, oh, actually all of this stuff that I've been seeing in training does correlate to a performance, but just not in the racing that I was doing before. So I did short course all the way up until 2022 Birmingham Commonwealth Games, and then from then on I did Dresden 70.3 and Qashqai's, like you mentioned earlier, and I actually crashed in Dresden even though I was having quite a good race, and then I had to go to hospital and whatnot and bruise my ribs. But basically that meant that the training in the lead into Qashqai's wasn't that great, and I didn't really put out an amazing performance. It wasn't bad by any stretch. Like, I think that I still had a really good swim bike, but my run just wasn't quite where it could have been if I'd had a better lead in. And then, yeah, I guess when it comes to 70.3, this season's been my first full season as a 70.3 athlete, and I've really seen some quite competitive results. Like in Lanzarote, I came seventh. With a very strong field, just behind, I think, Peter Himmerich and Backergaard, who have had phenomenal seasons. And then I didn't have a great time in Marbella and Samarin, but that they were quite hot races, and I think I was just like underfueled, underhydrated. But after that, then had like a really good series of races in Staffordshire, London, and the Guernsey Island Games before I went to the World Championships. So yeah, I think this season's been a real breakthrough season, and it has taken quite a while to see those performances come through from what I was seeing in training.
Okay, so like if you mentioned all the races you did this season, is there anything else to come this year where we have to watch out you, or are you done with it so far?
I don't know whether you should watch out for me, but I am going to be doing my first full distance Ironman in Qashqai's again this year. So instead of the 70.3, okay, I'm going to be giving the full distance a crack.
Okay, so that's quite early. How do you make this decision, trying to go full distance? We see that a lot of guys started to do that at a really young age. How was that and why?
So I actually managed to achieve all my goals this season by qualifying and then going to the World Championships. And I guess there was two routes that I could have gone down at the back end of this season after Worlds, which was to try and re-qualify for Worlds next year, or to give something new and kind of scary a go. So my thinking is that if I can go to my first full distance Ironman, data collect and experience what it's like, then next season, if I want to give some full distance a go and be competitive, then I'll have some experience already in me so that I'm able to kind of produce some better performances next season. So it's more of a case of data collect, experience what I can, so that I can be better next season, rather than to be good straight from the off. And I don't think that any 70.3s could have given me that for next season, because at the end of the day, I would quite like to get some higher PTO points. And to be honest, one of the only ways to do that for me at the moment is to race full distance, because you get more points because there's bigger prize purses and potentially better ranked athletes.
Yeah, for sure. So like, and then you have maybe the chance also joining the PTO races or get into that stuff. So just to suggest, just stay with Rasmus Svensson on the bike and maybe with Patrick Lange on the one. They are all there in Portugal. I think it will be a fantastic race. Yeah, we will watch out for you. And will you ever come back to ITU racing in terms of Commonwealth Games or something like that? Or is this part of ITU closed for you now?
I wouldn't say it's closed. It still does interest me, and I would definitely try and go back to the Commonwealth Games if I got the opportunity again, which, you know, I could go and try and qualify again in a couple of years' time. But I think I'm far better suited to long distance, and the financial reward of being long distance can be far greater. So I'll definitely be focusing on long distance for the time being. But I would definitely not close off going to the Commonwealth Games, because it's such a privilege every time I get to represent my island.
Okay, that sounds really cool. Also doing that and doing the switch, going back to that. Just to get a little bit more general, in Britain, what is more famous? Is it the short distance, or is it now with the PTO stuff and also like with Alistair is moving to Ironman, also Kate Matthews, Lucy Childs, Joe Skipper, you have a lot of great athletes, also long distance. Which is more famous at Britain?
I guess it's hard to tell like what is the preferred kind of short distance, long distance for the general public. However, I would hazard a guess that the Brownlees in themselves are probably the most famous and well-known triathletes. But I would say that as a general kind of assumption, long course is probably far more favoured by British than short course, just because it's something that they can relate to and do themselves. So the fact that they can go and race on the same courses as we can, they can get involved in, I guess, the pro triathletes that are doing those races as well. It just has a level of kind of interest that short course doesn't, because it's not as relatable. But yeah, no, I would say that the Brownlees do hold their own kind of fame, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So like you always hear that, they are really famous in Britain because of all the achievements they have done so far. But yeah, like you say, long course is also the same in Germany. A lot of people can relate to that because they can do that on their own. But just like maybe that's a little bit different in Britain, but you told us it's the same, so it's good to know. also people prefer to do long distance instead of short distance there because it's more in their abilities.
Yeah, exactly that. And yeah, I think people love triathlon for exactly that. They can actually race on the same courses as the professionals. They can compare their times to the professionals, but then they can also compare their times to their age groups as well. So yeah, it's a great opportunity for people to do long course at the same time.
Yeah, you took us with on your journey in triathlon. What is actually your age?
So I'm 30 now.
Ah, okay. I'm sorry. So you came quite a long way. How is the founding actually in the short course and also in the long course? How does it work in Britain? Is there any founding for long course from the state or from the country, or is it all self-employed?
No, so there's nothing funding-wise for long course. However, in short course, there is the Olympic pathway funding from British Triathlon, which I think is like lottery funding. But it's really hard to get on that, and especially when you're an older athlete. So in terms of my funding and long course funding, and even for the past 5 years, I've been completely self-funded, and that's either through sponsorship that I've acquired from different companies or work. So I tend to work a few days a week to help fund triathlon.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And will you ever do the full switch? Like, are you aiming for this one or not?
Yeah, 100%. So if I can switch to more triathlon or less work so that I can focus on recovery or training, then I will do. And I think that will come from either financial partnerships or sponsorships and prize money, I guess. So it's just a case of trying to work out those partnerships, find the people who are interested and would like to actually back me, back my story.
Yeah, for sure. So now it's the same here over in Germany. So, but like, you always think it's a little bit different because of the fame of the Brownies, but it's all the same with all the guys. Yeah, all over the world. So it's good to have a view into that. Yeah, like if you say you are 30, and when did you change actually to triathlon? You told us this was in 2017, so it's like at the age of 24, is that right?
Yeah, so 24 was when I changed, and to be honest, I was studying architecture at university.
Okay.
So basically in my fourth or fifth year, in my fourth year, I did a placement year in London and I was finding it really hard to swim. So to stay fit, I started cycling and running as well. And then I got the bug for it, as everyone does. And kind of made the switch a little bit more to highly competitive triathlon when I got to my fifth year at university. And straight after fifth year, I went a little bit more full time whilst doing a little bit of work.
So, as I just remember our race in Qashqai, I knew I was coming quite late to the start line. And I knew that you had a really good spot to start to swim.
Yeah.
You told me you will not move any centimeter. and I was like, okay, this guy is quite young and I will just go there and I will just push him on the other side. And you were not moving any centimeter. That's why I also was saying, okay, this guy is really going to do that race hard. And okay, I stay on the right side or on the back of yours. So it was fine for me after discussing the stuff with you 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you have some open water background or is it just, how do you develop that skill? I was thinking, okay, this guy is really skilled in open water. I never experienced anyone. I was thinking you were more young, but I have never experienced any guy so confident going into a swim. I just would like to know, how do you develop this skill?
Oh, dear. I'm so sorry for starters. I remember that start line and I remember being, I'd stood there for quite a while, I think it was, because I really wanted that position on the start line because it was like the inside line of where I wanted to be swimming. And I was like, nah, people aren't going to come last minute and try and budge in. So yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was probably a bit rude, but...
it was good for you and it was your right. You have been there... the first one, so I come late, so yeah.
In terms of open water skills and stuff, no, I don't have any background in open water. And to be honest, to say that I had good open water skills before, I guess, that race or one of my races before that, a lot of people that I'd been racing against beforehand probably would have laughed, because I would say that in a group, I actually don't have that good open water skills. When I get a little bit of my own space in open water, I think I'm quite a smooth swimmer just from my swimming background. And if I'm not being hampered, then I've got quite a good stroke and technique, so I can make the most of it and be efficient. But yeah, no, like, I think in general I swam quite well in Qashqai. I think I led out the first kilometer or so before being overtaken by the eventual winner, Manas Koolhaas. But I think in terms of open water swimming, if you're not completely gassed and knackered, then it's a lot easier to not look like it's difficult or make it look a bit easier. But yeah, no, I wouldn't say that I'm particularly good open water skill wise.
Yeah, okay. So I just want to know that. I just remember that's why I'm asking. So, and also like in terms of preparation stuff and all that work stuff, how is it to train in Britain? So like there are rumors it's always raining, it's always cold over here in Germany. Is this true, or how is the training in Britain for you? Do you do a lot of indoor stuff, or do you love to stay in the outdoors? Yeah, how is that?
Yeah, no, it is quite tough to train, especially from basically now in September, October, through to maybe April. It's quite wet, it's quite cold, but yeah, you get used to it. And as long as you've got good equipment and good kit, it's really not too difficult to train in. I think I do a lot on the turbo trainer, indoor bike trainer. Probably 50% of my hours is made up indoors. And then I make sure that my two long rides are always outdoors, as long as it's not icy, which, you know, sometimes it is. But there's not many rides that I miss in terms of my long aerobic rides. I think most of them are okay, and I've got decent kit. So yeah, I get through it, and it's not too bad. Like, we tend to try and go on a camp in January or February just to escape the really bad month, which kind of gives you a little bit more motivation to see off the rest of the winter. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty easygoing with all of that stuff. And as long as I've got a couple of people around me, I find it's more than okay.
Yeah, so you mentioned the camp January or February. So is it like that there's a pro community in Britain as well, so where everybody is connected and asking who's going on a camp, or is it like every pro is doing his own stuff basically?
So I guess I've got kind of a different setup to a few of the other professional long course athletes, because I'm actually part of the Performance Centre here in Wales, and it's a short course based squad, but it's a squad of about 16 people, and we go on the camp together. So there's maybe one or two other long course athletes within the squad, but the majority of them are short course. So it's quite good for like having company, being able to go on camps together, meeting up for rides like on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, no, in terms of having the squad around me, I think that's a fundamental part of my training.
Yeah, you mentioned like you're based in Wales, yeah?
Yes, and, yeah, Wales.
Which city?
Cardiff.
Cardiff, so that you have Loughborough as a triathlon center, Leeds. What else is to mention?
Yeah, so we've got Leeds and Loughborough are the two main high performance centers for triathlon. And then Cardiff is probably the next performance center in the kind of hierarchy. But then there's another two performance centres, which are Bath and Stirling in Scotland. So we have a few, so that I think that's five performance centres in total for triathlon. But most of them are short course orientated, not long course. And there's not many long course athletes that are involved with those short course programmes.
But would it be possible also for long course athletes joining them? So are these centres quite open to long course athletes as well? Or is it like actually, yeah, a closed environment?
I'd say in general, it's a relatively closed environment. I think that Leeds is slightly different. I think it does have a fair few long course athletes involved because the Brownleys are there. I think Lucy's up there as well. But it depends on, for us in particular, it depends whether or not you're bringing something to the training environment. So I know that the long course athletes that are involved in this squad are quite important in terms of bringing something to the training environment. So I've got good bike prowess and swimming prowess. So I know that in training sessions, I can be a strong swim biker and bring something to the group that maybe they can benefit from. So yeah, as long as you're bringing something to the group, I think that is quite important to have those types of people around.
Yeah, for sure. So like, it's always better to have a group, and yeah, it's more fun in training as well. But are there a lot of local athletes asking for that, or is it just a few like you mentioned?
I'm not sure if other long course athletes would like it. I definitely do. Yeah. I don't know if they seek it themselves. I know that a few of the other British people maybe meet up with one another, but I think a lot of it is solo training. I think I could do it, but I prefer having at least one other, if not a few other people around me, just for when I'm tired, really, and I just want a bit of company to drag me around.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like you said, there's always a time on the day, like when you are tired, and then yeah. So, and like training wise and volume wise, yeah, as a short course athlete and now moving into 70.3 at Ironman, what is the total volume, just an average in hours per week you do?
So I've always been quite a high volume athlete, primarily because that's what my physiology needs and allows. So when I say high volume, it's higher than some people. So I think on average in a year, I'm about 25 hours a week. So maybe somewhere between 1200 and 1300 hours a year. But quite a lot of that training is 30 hours a week. But obviously when you get into off season or racing season, it comes down a little bit. So yeah, about in and around there, but the kind of intensity distribution is slightly different depending on where I am in the season.
Yeah, but it's quite a lot. So you hear this. I just remember Malcolm Brown. I think he also published some data from the Brownies some years ago.
Yeah.
And they're also quite high volume. Is it in favor for Britain to do that volume? Like, it's in favor for all triathletes all over the world, but I think the British are quite far ahead also volume-wise. Is it a general thing or is it just depending on the athlete?
I think it depends on the athlete. I definitely don't think volume is key for everyone. And I think you can get similar results doing less volume. But I don't think that a lot of British athletes do that sort of volume either. I think there is a select few. And if you're talking about the Brownies, yeah, they're at the top of their game, or they were at the top of their game, and they did do a lot of hours, and it resulted in some very good performances. I'm seeing some half-decent results from, like, big volume, but again, that doesn't mean that someone can't get some really good results off less volume. So I don't know many people that do the kind of volume that I do. If you ask someone how much volume they do, mine doesn't include gym work at all, so that's just aerobic volume. And whereas you might ask someone else and they might say, yeah, I do 1200 hours a year, but it includes, I don't know, 200-300 hours of gym. It's like you don't know how it's so yeah, well, I think it depends on the person, and it depends on how you're kind of, I guess, utilizing those hours as well.
Yeah, for sure. So like you also have to responding to that hours, otherwise it wouldn't work at all.
Yeah.
So and as you said, for you, it seems to work quite well. In preparation for Qashqai, do you do all the preparation at home, or like you go over to Portugal before? And do you also increase the volume a little bit because it's a long distance, or you just stay at your 70.3 familiar work? And we'll just give it a try.
No, I'm definitely giving or trying to give the race the respect it deserves. And I've increased my volume to try and get some better conditioning in me. I think that the back end of the marathon is going to be really tough. I don't want to underestimate how hard people ride on for the 4 hours. So, yeah, I definitely want to be well prepared. But I don't think I've had enough time for what I would like to use to prepare. I'd probably want twice the amount of time, but I think that from the time that I've given myself, I've managed to get, or will have managed to have gotten, the amount of training that I would have liked to be confident that I can kind of complete the race. But whether or not I can finish in the higher ranks, we'll see. I'll do a similar sort of tactic to Worlds, no doubt, which is stay at the front for as long as possible and just hang on.
Yeah, for sure. So, and afterwards, like if the race went really well, or like we hope for that, you will finish your season, or are you also thinking about maybe doing a late race in Bahrain or something like that?
I have considered Bahrain, and it's definitely not completely off my agenda. But to be honest, after this one, I think I'm going to be ready for a little break. I've been working quite hard since basically this time last year. So I definitely need to come off the gas for a week or two, and then just see kind of where my priorities lie coming into December and January. And then, yeah, can formulate my plan for the rest of the season. So at the moment, there's no other plans after this race, just to relax.
Yeah, okay. That, do that. And first of all the listeners, and we will keep our fingers crossed for a race in Qashqai. We will watch it because, as I mentioned, I think it's a stacked field over there.
It is, yeah.
So, and it will be a great race. And good luck for you. And thanks for joining the show, Josh.
No, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, hopefully we'll see some good results coming forward next year as well.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you. Bye. Get up,